But first and foremost, we have Kelly Armstrong with us. He's congressman, North Dakota's lone congressman. And you know what? He wants to be our governor, and he's running for governor. And so let's get him on. Congressman Armstrong, good to have you back on News and Views.
Yeah, it's a great day. Opening day of baseball. Mets are already rained out, so I get to wait a day. So they at least can't be in last place. We're going from Max Bass Rugby to Leeds to Grand Forks. A good North Dakota spring day.
So you're a Mets fan, I take it.
I am. I was 10 years old in 1986, and I've been stuck with them ever since.
Well, I'm a Yankee fan, which makes us both real popular when it comes to our baseball, right? And my guess is both of us like it when the Twins win, so there's nothing wrong with that.
I do like it when the Twins win.
Exactly. So, Congressman, I want to talk to you first off about the – you guys call it a conference. I call it a caucus, but the Republicans in the United States House are, in my opinion, in total disarray. You've got Marjorie Taylor Greene one more time causing and forcing a leadership vote. The obvious question is, what in the heck's going on?
Well, I mean, she's filed it. She hasn't said she's going to trigger it. So far, as far as I'm aware, she's the only one who supports it. I think she's the only person in Congress on both sides of the aisle that wants to go through what we went through last fall. So I think Mike will be fine. Mike's got the toughest job in Congress. It's a reason you don't do on-the-job trading for being Speaker of the House. But he's working through it. And obviously, I disagree with some of the things he does, but I don't think that's unique for any speaker. But it's a good way for people to get attention. And it's unfortunate because we can't go through that again.
When you have such a narrow majority, and we both know that that's part of the problem, is you have such a narrow majority, and you have people inside the caucus doing what she's doing. I mean, how a congresswoman like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has no history of passing legislation, who has no, but she's in such a safe district that she's always going to be there. And so, you know, my question is, how do you get anything done?
Well, I mean, we keep working through it. You know, we got to get FISA reauthorized. We're still working on trying to get a farm bill done, trying to get that at least over to the Senate so we have some options with it. I mean, we just, behind the scenes, we keep working with as many, people as we can. You know, we marked up like 20 bipartisan bills in energy and commerce last week we were in Congress. Obviously, that never gets covered because of a lot of this drama, but you know, there's a lot of stuff that makes the headlines, and there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, Joel, that doesn't.
But you say that, Congressman. You say that. And there is no farm bill. All we see is extensions on the farm bill. We see extensions.
Yeah.
There is no budget. There's no budget. All we see is extensions on the budget. There is no funding for Ukraine. There's nothing there. There's all these demands from the House Republicans saying, look, you've got to deal with the southern border. We need to do this. You know, we need legislation. And this was prior. This is in the election. We need good, solid legislation dealing with our southern border. Then when you got it, you didn't want it. I mean,
we never got it, Jill.
You did too. You would have gotten it, Congressman, if the former president of the United States wouldn't have said kill it, which is why the Senate killed it. The House never said send it over here, we'll pass it.
Well, the House passed over a border bill last May to the Senate that's been collecting dust on Chuck Schumer's desk. So, I mean, the only live border bill that exists in Congress is the bill that the House of Representatives sent to the Senate. I can't control what the Senate votes or doesn't vote on, but we have a live border security bill.
Actually, when it comes to the farm bill and it comes to aid for Ukraine and when it comes to a drive for this, there's many things the House can do to make sure it goes forward, and you're not. Can you at least admit it's not happening?
Well, I'm glad we're not taking up a foreign aid package that combines all those three without having any debate on the floor of the House. And I think we got to keep moving forward towards that. But we passed our budget bills last week. I obviously don't like getting 1,200-page bills 24 hours before I'm told to vote for them. Went back and read some of my comments I made when Speaker Pelosi did it and recognized that, you know, if I'm going to be that critical of the other side doing those things, I'd be pretty hypocritical of me to go walk down on the floor and vote on something I didn't have a chance to get through just because my team's doing it.
So, my point goes back to this. Either the caucus functions or it doesn't. And if you look at the House caucus, the Republican caucus, because that's still your job for a while. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to get a farm bill this year?
My best guess is probably we get one done in lame duck, because I think Senator Sabinow's done. You know, we can't get her. I mean, there's a lot of blame that gets put on the House Republican conference. You just talked about it, and we earned some of the drama. But we've got real problems over in the Senate side with Senate Democrats on commodity pricing and loan cap rates, and we need to get them to recognize that as well. I'm hopeful we get one through the House. Whether that gets done before the election, that's another story. If I had to bet my best money on it, I would say we get it done during the lame duck.
And I'm going to say this. I agree with you on the Senate when it comes to some of your problems. I get it. But the big problem that's out there that's looming on this is the way that everything's been defined in this country. You're seeing the rural areas end up being all red. You're seeing the urban areas end up being all blue. And because of the fact that because they're blue, they're taking a hard look at things like the farm bill. And unless we get something done, and thank God it's a five-year period usually, it can be a real problem for farmers. We always talk about 100%. SNAP, how that's the problem. You know what? If SNAP wasn't part of the farm bill, our farmers would be, they'd be taking in the shorts big time.
I think you and I have talked about that before. I mean, in an ideal world, do I wish it was separated? Sure. But I need 218 and 60. And if you can't get 218 and 60, you can't pass a farm bill, which means it has to be put together in the package the way it's put together now. I've always said that. I mean, the reality of passing it and getting the programs we need out here in North Dakota requires that compromise.
Okay. When you look at what's going to happen with Ukraine, are we going to get an aid package for Ukraine? And would you, if it was a standalone aid package or if it was included in a budget bill, would you support aid to Ukraine?
Those are two different questions.
Well, let me ask it this way. Would you support aid to
something else? I don't know.
Would you support aid to Ukraine?
Yes, there is a package out there that exists that would help me support aid to Ukraine. 35% of the world's exportable wheat comes from the Donbas region of the Ukraine. We've seen what happens when Russia controls our European gas market. I don't think we want to see what happens when Russia controls the food market in Northern Africa. There's also a real scenario on any kind of this package that I vote against it too. I got to see what it actually is.
Your conference is so narrow in its majority, and you have a number of your caucus members that will not support aid to Ukraine. Number one. Number two, when they speak publicly, it's as though they support Vladimir Putin over Ukraine. How do you fix that?
Well, and there's tons of Democrats in the House that won't vote for aid to Israel, and it's going to be a bipartisan deal. But I actually don't. I've been really frustrated with the entire argument on the Ukraine, because all I've heard out of the White House, and to be quite honest, a lot from some of my Senate Republican colleagues over there, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, is we just give Zelensky a blank check, and that's the official United States position, and that's unacceptable. And I can tell you what, that's unacceptable to most North Dakotans too. I'm out here a lot right now.
Well, get the farm bill done with what you can do. When we come, you know what, Congressman, throughout this campaign for governor, and we're going to get to that when we come back, we have been talking about access, and the type of questioning that you just got is not friendly questioning. It's hard questioning. We're talking about tough issues. I respect the fact that you don't duck, that you don't dive, that you come on this show. I'm not sucking up
to
you.
Well, I hope people think I actually answer your questions, too. I try not to pivot it. I mean, I try not. One of the biggest things they teach you at media training in D.C. is answer the question the way you want when you want to talk about it. And I've just never subscribed to that argument.
Well, and the reason I say that is because I respect it. And when we come back, we're going to talk about your campaign right here on the News and Views Radio Network. Congressman Kelly Armstrong wants the job, and so does Tammy Miller, a lieutenant governor of the state of North Dakota. They want to be the next governor of the state of North Dakota. Congressman Armstrong, to say that the race has become spirited would be a gross understatement. A lot of ads out there, a lot of your ads are quite negative when it comes to Tammy Miller. Why?
Well, we decided to run for race. You know, I know who she hired. I know their MO. I know what their push-pull was going to be on me, and you know, I've never run a negative ad in all the times I've run for office, but I'm going to play the game as it is, not the game as we wish it is. And I think, I mean, I think this is the best job in all of politics. And if you're going to go do it, you better do it. You better fight to do it. And that's what we're going to do as we keep going from here until June 11th.
Do you think Tammy Miller's a good person?
Yeah, I know Tammy. I think she's Lieutenant Governor. I think that's true. I just don't think the people you're seeing in your ads is the person who she really is. And that's one of the things that frustrates me about politics.
But that isn't what I asked. I know she's Lieutenant Governor, and I know you know her.
No,
I don't know her super well. She came out with all these negative ads right away, blasting away at you. I mean, do you think she's a good person for doing that?
Oh, well, I don't have any reason to think she's not a good person. I think she wants to be the governor, and I think she's listening to her consultants, and I think that's, I mean, unfortunate, but that's how this works.
Do you think she'd make a good governor?
I don't know. You get to ask her that. I think we would make a better governor. That's why we're running.
Okay. Let me ask you this. The one thing that you're doing in your race, and you picked up upon it right after she did it on her race, was you ran as quickly to Donald Trump as you could. Obviously, Donald Trump, popular in the state, but you two, I think it's safe to say, you two are doing everything you can to align yourself with Donald Trump. Which one of you two is closer to Donald Trump?
Well, I've actually met him, so I don't know about any of that. But I would just say, Joel, you and I have fought about Donald Trump on your show for the last 5 years. I've been in the middle of all of these things. I was on the judiciary and during Schiff's secret bunker and the Mueller impeachment. This isn't new for me. I've been dealing with this stuff for a long, long time, and we're just making sure that our record on that stands out. And we're not embellishing. We're not doing any of those things. I was one of the few people that the president retruthed, I guess is what we call it, during the her hearing. We got a shout out from him when we were here, and we're proud of our record with that.
So because of that, I have to ask this question. You know, there's this blanket endorsement of Donald Trump by both you and Tammy Miller. Can you name two things that Donald Trump has done bad, that Donald Trump isn't good at, or that you don't think that Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form has done on behalf of America the right way?
I think there's two things that I've always said. Is one, when he was president last time, he didn't put enough undersecretaries in place, and I think it's the lowest common denominator to Republicans, less bureaucracy. And that really forced a problem with him not having his policies being implemented by Secretary Bernhardt and those guys. I thought that was a real mistake. And then, yeah, it frustrates me that nobody in D.C. will talk about mandatory spending in a real responsible fashion. And I don't want to take away anybody's Social Security, and I don't want to take anybody's Medicare and Medicaid away. But it's 75% of the budget. We're $34 trillion in debt. And if we don't have real bipartisan talks about what that looks like, my daughter, who's 16, and my son, who's 14, are going to have real problems with these programs that still need to exist when they age out of the workforce.
Well, we can talk about, you know, the benefits that came along with some of the high-end tax breaks, too, but that's a whole nother issue. I want to ask this.
You and I may disagree on some of that.
Well, I totally disagree. And here's where we're going to disagree. Number one, you're going to make the argument that, boy, look at the money that came into this country by giving the high-end people the tax break. And I'm going to say that it only works in terms of the deficit if you guys rein in spending. You were in control. You didn't rein in spending when you gave the tax breaks.
Yeah, I mean, we don't. Nobody in D.C. I mean, this is the problem in D.C. Both sides don't touch the real drivers of spending, even in all these budget fights. And I think there's plenty. I don't like earmarks. I don't like a lot of those different issues. But until you start dealing with some of the real drivers, is we're all fighting around the edges and fighting over crumbs.
Do you think Donald Trump should be selling Bibles?
I think Donald Trump should be able to do whatever he wants to do all of these things. I think he's a unique person, and I think, I mean, if people are going to buy him, he has the right to do it.
Interesting. What would your take be if
I don't even know if he's making any money.
What would your take be
that?
If Joe Biden right now was selling Bibles?
Well, there's a difference. One of them is currently the president of the United States, and the other one is not.
The other one claims he's president of the United States. The president,
the other one
45,
is running for president as a private citizen.
The other one claims he's still the president of the United States.
He doesn't claim he's the president.
Sure he does, Kelly. He sits there and says he won that election, that this was all about election fraud. He goes around telling people that he is still the true president. He acknowledges that Joe Biden is in the White House. He gets that, but he doesn't admit that Joe Biden is actually president of the United States, while at the same time, he's selling gold sneakers and Bibles.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Donald Trump is a constant promoter. He's done these things his entire life. He's a unique brand in politics, and I think it's why people like him so much.
Which is why I'm asking you the question, if Joe Biden was selling Bibles, what would your reaction be right now?
Well, I'd have a different problem with it if he was doing it as president, for sure.
Okay. I think I made my point, and I think you've made your point when it comes to it. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that he's doing this on behalf of my country. I am. He's a grifter, and that's exactly what's happening here. When it comes to North Dakota, you're elected governor. What's the first thing you're going to do?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is sit down and figure out what happens with this property tax measure. You know, one thing about going across the state for over a month and a half, and you and I have talked about this, is, it's top of mind with everybody. And it's not just what people would consider, you know, like online influencers or, you know, Rick Becker, who's promoting the measure. It's not just that. It is every chamber of commerce. It's big communities, small communities. I've already started reaching out to, you know, some mayors and city commissioners and school board members and figuring out what we can do and figure out how this looks. Because even if this measure gets on the ballot and fails, it's going to keep coming back until we deliver something.
Do you have it narrowed down, and when are you going to announce who your running mate is?
Yes, we have it narrowed down. We will announce sometime either at the convention or shortly before.
Okay.
Not picked it yet.
Is it going to be a woman?
I have not picked it yet.
Okay. And you will announce before
there are
the
women on the short list. Yes. Still.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Last one. I'm sure Abby's going to scream at me here. Do you think it's wrong that Tammy Miller doesn't take you on at the convention?
I wish she would go. Everybody makes their decision. You know, this is going to be decided in June. I've learned a long time, even as state party chairman, if you try and tell voters that they don't get to determine who it is. I wish we all still honored the convention process. I think it would save Democrats money in primaries, Republicans money in primaries, and then you could debate those issues. But each candidate can do what they want.
See, and I never even asked you how you feel about Doug Burgum endorsing Tammy Miller. You got to be happy with me about that.
I'll answer any questions you ask. You know that.
You do that. I give you that. As always, Congressman, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on, and let's do this even more, okay?
All right. Thanks, Joel.
You bet. Congressman Kelly Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen.